This week on the Koshcast. It's the final day of the Premier League. As City reach a century, Arsene departs eventually. Liverpool secure top four as it was meant to be. Who would have predicted United winning sensibly? Spurs and Leicester lose their minds defensively, and Chelsea don't care, ostensibly. We'll look back over a cracker of a season, look ahead to the Champions League final, and revel in the company as we're joined by TSN's Christian Jack. Get on board. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Koshcast on underthekoshblog.com and at under_thekosh on Twitter. My name is Alex. Bernie is here.
Hello, hello.
Roche is here.
Hey.
And joining us today, a very special guest, Christian Jack of TSN. How are you?
I'm great. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen Caldwell gave us a good recommendation.
Rave reviews.
Yeah.
Yes. Nice. Good today.
So I'm sure most of our listeners will have heard of you, seen you on TV. In case anyone hasn't, when did you come to Canada and how did you get involved in covering soccer here?
I've lived in Canada now for, I guess, over 17 years. I covered the sport in England. I graduated as a journalism degree and worked in the newspaper industry for a newspaper called Lancashire Union Post. So covered teams in the Northwest, which were predominantly lower league teams at that point. David Moyes' Preston and so on and so forth. Then I moved to Canada in 2000 and basically tried to work my way into the sports media industry. At that point, wasn't that easy right away, but then worked at The Score for 10 years, which was like the third TV company, I guess, that existed at that point against TSN and Sportsnet. And we did the shows like The Sports World and The Footy Show. So I covered the game for them and produced shows for them and then found some stuff on air. And then I've been at TSN and just today, I guess, completed the fifth Premier League season with TSN.
Amazing.
Can we just say, like, so around the time that four of us, if Mohamed was here, came to Canada, The Score was pretty much the place you went to watch football.
Yeah.
You know, I think Sportsnet maybe had a little bit, but you had Serie A on The Score and then The Footy Show as well. And you had this tactics corner thing.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was called, but you did that.
They named me. It wasn't self into the time. They named me the formation geek. That's what the segment was.
It was better than Andy Townsend's tactics truck on ITV. So
you lost me at Andy Townsend. I can say that as a form of a lacrosse.
It's interesting, like, to have you here. It's a great pleasure because we, like, literally stepped off the plane, watched some football, and it's KJ and James Sharman on.
It's great to hear. Thank you.
Absolutely.
No, it's a pleasure to do it. It was, as you mentioned, we had the Premier League for a little bit. We lost that, and then it was like, how do we get back in football? And we embraced having the Serie A for a few seasons, and that was great. And we did the World Cup Tonight show in 2010, and then Copa America as well. So we always were fighting that little battle against the two big powers. And in the end, you know, the Score TV network was no more. And thankfully, James is doing his great stuff on Sportsnet, and I continue to do stuff at TSN.
Yeah, it's good. And the Score now has it's a different format, but it has some good writers. We have a couple that come on the pod.
I've got a few friends over there. They do a great job.
Exactly. So it all worked out,
yeah,
which is nice. All right, so let's start with the Premier League. Let's go with Liverpool. 4-0 against Brighton. They had to win to secure top four if Chelsea were to do anything, which they didn't. But nonetheless, Liverpool had to secure top four because we were thinking about this midweek and what an incredible end to the season it would have been had Liverpool lost out on top four and then gone on to lose the Champions League final. I mean, comedy gold.
We knew it wasn't going to happen that way, though.
No.
Liverpool have been very tidy, and they finished the season strong. And I think they're flying going into the Champions League final.
Yeah. I mean, Christian, you were watching this in the studio.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, all in all, it was pretty... I think Klopp tried to play it up, didn't he, before the game. You know, Brighton were really good in the last couple of games, and this won't be an easy game for us. And I think he was saying all the right things. I don't think he wanted the atmosphere at Anfield to be, you know, almost a party atmosphere before the game even kicked off. I think I said on the show, though, I felt that, you know, we could sit here for an hour, the whole show, talking about what Klopp's done to Liverpool to improve them. One of the things for me is that they just don't lose games like that anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, they used to be, you know, Palace and Swansea last year, for example. You know, those kind of teams would come into Anfield and really give them a go, you know, and they felt like Liverpool were vulnerable. And it almost feels like that whole shift that defensively Liverpool are always going to give you an opportunity, that storyline's almost disappeared during this massive run with all those goal scorers as well. So, I mean, Brighton, didn't have anything to fight for. So all in all, it was a little bit like last year. Liverpool had to do something last year on the last day of the season against Middlesbrough, and they did that then, and they did it again today.
I feel like a lot of this transformation that we've seen in Liverpool has literally happened in the last 2-3 months. Because after they beat City, they then went on to lose against West Brom in the FA Cup.
Swansea, right after.
Oh, Swansea?
Yeah.
Oh, well, they lost one of those games. And they lost
to West Brom in the Cup as well.
Yeah, a lot of people were upset. And they were phoning in and saying, it's no better than Brendan. It's bullshit. It's this, that.
They were calling you?
Like, oh, no. I mean, I would change my number if that were the case. Because I don't want to talk to Liverpool fans anyway. But it was just unbelievable that people just, they were really upset. And after a while, he started to pick it up. And I think that the Champions League campaign really started to gather pace. That was when people really became firm believers in this Jurgen Klopp philosophy at Liverpool.
Well, two things for me. One is that I was proven wrong about, not about Van Dijk as to whether he was a good player or not, but I wasn't convinced that a person was going to make the defense a lot better. Mm. I thought it was more of a system problem and possibly a kind of Klopp blind spot. But Van Dijk stepped in and their defense did improve dramatically. As you said, the Liverpool that give you a chance, especially at home, just doesn't exist anymore. They just blow you away. And now, if I look at a fixture list and it's Liverpool at home, win. It's a win.
No one stands a chance at Anfield right now. I don't think it's there yet. Because we saw, like for example, the Roma game. They completely capitulated in at home the first leg, which could have made it very, very nice. But it's you see a little bit of that, and I feel like if Lovren isn't the defense, you still have a problem. I think he wants Matip and Van Dijk as his first two other players that he has available, and then you'll see the best Liverpool defense for him.
I think that you're both right in regards. Look, I think Van Dijk has made a difference, but I think we're only seeing the beginning of it. I think that they need a full season together again. The one thing I would say is I still think Lovren's a little bit better than Matip, but what I mean in terms of that, I think that you bang on. I think that you always feel like he's vulnerable. I think when Real Madrid will look at him, for example, and say, that's a weakness that we can get at. But the whole team defensively has improved a lot under him. They're nowhere near the level that they need to be if they want to contend for next year's Premier League, by the way. But Naby Keita will certainly be a massive help with that as well.
Oh, you don't think so? You don't think they're going to challenge for the league?
No, I think they need to get better defensively if they're going to challenge for the league still. But I think that Keita will definitely help for that. But yeah, I think they're a genuine contender next year. I really believe that.
Yeah, no, they've got a strong attack. They've got 80 goals this season, 84 after today. And, you know, a top four finish, Champions League final. I feel like they're growing under Klopp. We talked about their defense improving. So I think that they might be up there, at least for, you know, top three minimum.
The problem is when you talk about will they be able to challenge for the league is that they're 25 points behind City. Mm. City have been unbelievable. And it's hard right now to imagine City being much worse next season. And so, like, that is a massive gap.
It's a big gap. But
so Liverpool have had a wonderful season. They're still not even close.
But they are better than City on the day. They knocked them out of the Champions League. They beat them in the league.
They know how to beat City, for sure.
I think the gap doesn't close by that much. I think they're not going to be 25 points behind next season. I don't believe that. I think they will get closer. But just to Alex's point, I don't think there will be a title challenge involving Liverpool, if you know what I mean.
Well, a lot of these discussions come down to, you know, what's the level of the team who wins the league? Mm-hmm. I think when Leicester won it, the second team, Tottenham, I think they had 70 points. So now we're talking about the 75 points getting fourth. So a lot of it comes down to what's the rest of the league. And the rest of the league, the top six are taking a lot more points than they've ever taken off the other teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you look at it, could Liverpool, they got 76 last year, they got 75 now. Could they get 83, 84 next year? I think they could. Mm-hmm. Could you turn that as a three-game swing?
Yeah.
Manchester City are not going to get 100 points again. That next season, it's not for me. It's not going to happen. Mm. And they'll go out and spend more money. Mendy will play more games. You can argue they'll be better, but they're not going to win 32 games out of 38 and get 100 points off a World Cup where they've maximized. They pushed these players to a level that they can't play that many minutes again next season, and I think there'll be a little bit of a dip.
Do you think that? I mean, let's take that opportunity to move on to City.
Before we do that, Salah just broke the record for top goals scored by anybody in the Premier League. I know. So we haven't talked about him.
We talk about him every week. You're right.
Mohamed will kill us if we don't.
That's true.
Mohamed the fourth, he's Egyptian, so we have to do this.
I thought you meant Mo himself. I thought.
Oh, yeah. You know him personally.
I've already heard that Liverpool fans call you, and now I thought Mo might give you a call tonight.
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, he's been unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Roche, you were talking about the comparisons with the Suarez.
Yeah, so Liverpool have always had that one explosive player randomly show up in their lineup. You know, it was Torres, then it was Suarez, and Suarez for me was probably the most explosive before Salah showed up.
Yeah.
And so I was discussing with Alex, I said, you know, Suarez I think had a more explosive season because he was banned for the first five games and still went to score 31.
Mm-hmm.
So he had 31 and 33 in the league, and Salah has 32 and 36.
Yeah.
So they're very comparable, but for me, I think Suarez is the guy.
They're very different players, though, aren't they? That's the thing. I mean, Suarez, I think, didn't have as good a team around him that Salah has. I mean, Salah's got Firmino and Mane and an explosive trio where, you know, I think the team that you could argue the team that almost won the league, even though they got closer to win the league, I don't think was as talented as this Liverpool team. And I know this Liverpool team didn't get anywhere near to win the league, but that's because of obviously the Goliaths of Man City. So Suarez, you know, I'd never take anything away from him, but you know, he's a penalty box reference point. You know, Mo Salah is like, he's exploding from halfway line. It's all about the transition game now. They've modeled that game around what they've got, and you know, to have the opportunity to play with someone like Roberto Firmino every week, I think your overall game and your IQ level is just going to go off the charts.
Don't get me wrong. I think they're both amazing. I think Salah's done some exceptional things. Better team around him. But Suarez, I was more scared of him. He made me feel more.
It might just be his face.
Or his bites.
I think part of everyone's scared of him. Suarez drags Liverpool through a lot of games. Like, literally, it was as if he was just dragging them along. Where Salah is, I don't think he's dragging Liverpool. I think, like you said, Liverpool is a good functional team with good pieces around that. He'll score the first, score the fourth, score the... team movements happen, but there were so many goals that Suarez scored, like one of the, from 40 yards against Norwich, and just outstanding things out the box.
Individual brilliance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Goals out of nothing.
Yeah, for sure.
And they had 101 goals that season.
They did, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the Premier League?
Yeah. Because Sturridge got a lot, and Sterling got double figures, and yeah, it was...
Oh, wait, what's the record for goals?
City,
105.
105, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, can we move on to City?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Actually,
you can tell your friend Salah we've moved on.
although we do think that he might drag Egypt to a quarter final.
Yeah, we're putting some money.
You
on
do
that. Put some money on that.
Oh wow!
Second round for me. Quarter final.
Well, that's why I'm putting money on it because it's going to be a good bet.
Yeah. I'm a little unsure they're going to get. I'm not sure they're going to get through the group.
Really?
Who's in their group again?
Saudi Arabia,
Uruguay,
Russia.
And Russia.
Yeah. See, Russia are terrible.
That's doable.
So they're not that bad, actually.
No, I think they'll get out of that.
The Russia are not as bad as you think, and they're at home. So you're going to go against history, because only one team, and that was the awful South African team in 2010, whose host of World Cup never got out of the group.
I tell you what, the reason I might agree with you is because I don't trust Russia not to fix it.
Oh, yeah.
We've gone there.
Say it loud, say it proud.
That's it. Yeah. You just say what everybody's thinking.
Yeah.
It's very admirable.
Maybe I'll put money on that instead. All right. Manchester City. So let's talk about some records here. So 18 consecutive wins, which is the most ever.
Mm-hmm.
Most goals with 105 or 106, you think
after
it might
today,
be?
Yeah.
Okay. Most passes completed in a Premier League game, 904. Most wins in a season, 32. Most away wins, 16. Most points, 100. And biggest goal difference is plus 79. It has been a ridiculous season for City.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch and cover for me. You know, to see them go to that next level that I think the storyline, you can't tell it without personally thinking about that Everton loss last season when everybody wanted to cut Guardiola and say it's time for you to change everything around now. And you know, you can't play this way in the Premier League anymore. And I think that's part of the storyline, and it's easy to look at that. But the other thing too is that Guardiola's Manchester City year one is drastically different when you look at the players to Guardiola's Manchester City year two. And when we look back, if this does turn out to be an era of greatness, this year will be year one rather than year two, because it's just so dramatically different.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, you're absolutely right. I actually called for Guardiola's head.
Like his head?
Yeah.
You wanted him fired?
I wanted it in a box.
Amazon Prime.
Not really, but...
But you wanted him fired?
I did, and I said, you know, maybe unceremoniously so, but I did say that he would be sacked by Christmas.
A little bit of tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, mostly wanted him to be sacked. But he did well. He's probably had the best season any manager has had in the Premier League ever.
I mean, to the point about year one and year two, we talked about how it was weird that City, the kind of front office, did not prepare the squad.
Yes.
For Guardiola. Like, they knew 3 years in advance that that was the plan to get him in. They brought in Beguirestein, Soriano, and Guardiola, and they finally got their man, and they had this squad full of players that you knew would not be able to play exactly the way he wanted. Mm-hmm. Started the season with Clichy and Zabaleta. And
Sanya.
You knew that massive changes had to be made, and it was bizarre that that wasn't done. And so people talk about last summer and how much City spent. And it's like, well, they had to, because to play that football, they couldn't do it with the squad that, that had been given to Guardiola.
Yeah, and not only players who suited Guardiola, but for the right age as well. Because, you know, the players you mentioned, they didn't, not only didn't fit Guardiola's template, but they were way gone. You know, the way, that's the problem in sports, though, sometimes. It's when they, when you've had a successful era, is how to get rid of those players.
Yep.
And, you know, the great Liverpool teams, the great Manchester United teams always found a way, I thought, to get rid of a player maybe 1 year too early. It's better to do that than get rid of a player 1 year too late.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what sometimes it's the issue. And then even Yaya Toure, like, he didn't belong in this team this year, but they were never gonna, nobody in football was going to give him the wages that he was on, similar to the other players that he had to move on last year. So sometimes you just have to say, okay, we're stuck with these players, and now you've shredded a lot more wages. And then, you know, I think the fear is for a lot of teams in the Premier League that they're probably going to go out and spend another 150 to 200 million on three big players again.
Yeah, I was we were all surprised last season. Guardiola came in and didn't have the mass clear out that I think most people before he showed up said that's what needs to happen, and it didn't happen. Some would say he was assessing his squad ahead of the season and all that, but I felt you cannot make Bakary Sagna do what you want him to do. You cannot make Clichy do those things either. To me, it was obvious, and for me, the mistake that he made was not making these changes that he made this season when he first came in. Because he's done those things at Bayern Munich, where he came in, changed the squad to fit him, and all sorts of things like that. So I was suspicious of why he didn't do that. But this season overhauled everything. And like you said, look at the numbers. They speak for themselves.
Yeah, and to Bernie's point, I want to add that what he's done with Raheem Sterling is not only good for City and Sterling, but it's also good for England coming into this World Cup, because now every English fan deep down inside is going to think, well, Sterling is going to bring something else to England.
No, I think you're right. I think when you look at the England team and the youth of the team, and, you know, expectations are another thing that are always out of whack, but the big players for them now are working under genuine world-class managers.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter whether it's Pochettino, it doesn't matter whether it's Mourinho, it doesn't matter whether it's Klopp, it doesn't matter whether it's Guardiola. Week in, week out, day in, day out, they're working under them. And that's bound to have a big development in their game. And whether they can equate that and play that like way when they wear white in the summer is another question mark. But long-term, they can't do anything but help them.
Yeah, yeah. Especially with Gareth Southgate at the helm.
I actually like him a lot.
Southgate?
Yeah.
Big fan of Southgate.
He's interesting. Yeah. He's weird. Very weird. Because I don't know why Livermore made that squad at all. Like, the squads he made.
Lack of
that
options.
Doesn't make sense to me.
Lack of options.
Okay. Have you seen the players who could be playing for England in midfield? You might get a game.
I'm ready. I'm ready to get the call.
I don't know if you've got a passport.
You haven't seen
Alex
first
definitely
touch.
Definitely has a passport. Sign you up. If you can play midfield, if you're genuinely an English midfielder who plays in the Premier League,
right?
Like, you've got a shot at making the World
I'm getting calls from Liverpool fans a lot, and now
and
Southgate.
So we were, what was it? You mentioned Tom Huddleston earlier. I can't remember the context, but I was like, oh yeah, Tom Huddleston.
Someone made a mistake in the Leicester game with Tottenham. It looked like Tom Huddleston.
Oh yeah, it was Wanyama, but
yeah.
I was just wondering what he's up to.
What I mean. See, that's the depth of they don't have.
It is poor, but yeah. Shelby though, at least Shelby or Livermore, at least. But
I think
just
that's
me being picky.
Yeah.
But like, you're really not winning an argument. You're not selling me on any genuine talent here.
I agree.
Like, that's the problem that they have, I think.
Anyway, it just has to be someone that can kick Dembele in the first 5 minutes against Belgium and then move on.
Put your foot through it, maybe.
So that's City. Unbelievable. Actually, one more question I'll ask you about City. And we asked this to Dan Rouse at The Score, who is a City fan.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he got an objective answer from Dan. And I can say that because I know him.
But here's the question. Where do you think City need to strengthen?
I think if they buy 3 new players, I think they need a new centre-back.
Okay.
I think they need a central midfielder who can definitely give Fernandinho less minutes. Yep. Someone like Fred from Shakhtar Donetsk, for example, would be, I think, a brilliant signing for them. And I think they're going to sign another striker. I don't know who that might be yet, but I think that they've seen that Gabriel Jesus is the number one going forward. And I think that maybe we have another year of Aguero, but they tend to do things in advance, and I don't think they'd want to remove Aguero and then bring somebody in the same summer. So I wouldn't be surprised if they went out and got somebody else to play in that position as well. So
that
for me are the areas. You look at centre-back, I think Laporte will one day become their best central defender. I'm a magnificent fan. I've seen a lot of him play in Spain, and I don't think English football has seen the best of him yet. Stones had an up-and-down year. The January injury cost him a little bit. Otamendi is on the wrong side of his age, and Company you still can't rely on to play 10 games.
But you think another centre back should come in?
I think they need another one. Yeah. Okay.
So a star centre back and two squad players.
Well, no, I mean, I don't know whether it needs to be a star, but I think it needs to be somebody who can play 10 to 15 Premier League games a season in all of those three positions.
Okay.
You know, and I think, you know, whoever that may be, it's centre back, defensive midfielder, and
there's a lot of money to keep piling on that defense.
But you know what, they have it.
They have it.
You know, they'll have it, and he's already said it. He's already said they're going to spend it again. The thing for me is that the lesson to be learned from Premier League champions is this: Chelsea and Leicester, they, when you add up their starting 11 and the amount of appearances they played during the season combined, and if you do it over, if they play every game, it's 380. The number, they're over 300. And they were exhausted the following year. They didn't have a big enough squad. And Man City have pushed that limit again. The best players have almost played every single game.
And like you said, the World Cup coming up as well.
World Cup coming on, that can't go on. You've got to be able to get competition for places. And David Silva, Kevin De Bruyne next year, in an ideal world, I think will be starting 30, not 37 Premier League games.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
They kept all of them fit for the most part.
Pretty much. Oh, yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah. They don't do a lot of running because they get the ball.
Yeah,
sure. Imagine playing against that team. That's
no,
the
I don't
want
to imagine that.
Yeah.
All right. Their opponents today were Southampton. Just stayed up. And we won't take too long on them. But they used to be such a well-run club. Used to appoint managers that played, I'm not going to say the Southampton way, but played decent football or tried to. They used to recruit really well. They used to bring through youth products. What has happened to Southampton?
Yeah, it's a club I know quite well, actually. I've been there a lot lately over the last 3 or 4 years. I've got family there. I've interviewed Ralph Kruger there a couple of times at St. Mary's. I think they're the classic case of a team that have tried to kick on again. And I think, for me, it's that recruitment level of when you talk about finding those players between, say, 10 to 30 million pounds, you can really either hit it or you can really miss it.
I
think that's the problem. They've missed a lot of those signings. Obviously, Van Dijk was a massive problem. They never replaced him anyway. You could argue that Hoyt's been an average player when they come in, and I think on the ball he looks good. But their acquisitions of some players have been a disaster. They can't find a goal scorer. I think they won 7 games. They won one game in 6 months, and that was against West Brom. So it's been a terrible year, but they've survived. Now they've got to find a true leader because they haven't replaced one since Koeman, because the last two managers have been a disaster, and that's not including Hughes, who I don't know whether will be the
manager.
Could
they bring Koeman back, you think?
He's just
too
old.
Oh, yeah. True, I forgot about that. What a waste of time.
I don't think he'll go there, but yeah, I do think that they've got to find somebody. And they've got, you know, they always told me when I was there, you know, they've got the special room with all these analytics and no one's allowed in there with the scouting system they've got. And it's just, so far, they've got, Les Reed and Kruger right from the very top. They've got to look at that again and see where they can go, because I think what you'll learn from this year is that you look at the three teams that went down, they all follow the similar pattern.
Yeah.
Massive Premier League survival for the last decade, and many of it's 10 years, 8 years, 7 years, and then eventually you spend, your fan base gets stale and bored of mid-table security, let's do more, and then you push it, and then you end up going down to the championship with a massive wage bill.
Yeah.
So it sounds like things are precarious at Southampton, but I actually think if you're Southampton right now, you'd be celebrating, because you have a second shot at life almost. You've been selling a lot of players, you've been generating so much revenue, you stayed in the Premiership despite selling your biggest asset this season, which is Virgil van Dijk.
Yes.
And next season, you have the whole summer to rebuild your squad. So there's a lot of opportunity ahead. So I expect them to be maybe like more closer to mid-table next season.
There's not a lot of difference between that, though. That's the thing these days.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like 3 or 4 points.
Yeah,
yeah,
it really is.
Yeah. I was glad they stayed up. It's good.
Same.
No. Oh yeah, you wanted a fire sale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like clubs who are good and then they fall off a cliff, so you can pick off their assets. So
you can pick them off, or
well, the manager of my club can pick them off.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they never ever do.
It was Bertrand you wanted, right?
I think he's a good player.
He is.
You're a Man United fan, right?
Yeah.
How did it go last time you bought a left back from Southampton?
We bought the worst Southampton player ever.
That's not true.
In hindsight.
You bought Francis Benali?
You know what? I was in have you ever seen the Twitter account Benali on tour?
No.
So my partner and I just stickers? Yeah. I was in New Orleans recently and I went to the bathroom in this jazz venue and there's this like Premier League sticker of Francis Benali. Where then they've added like Twitter account Benali on tour. So I took a picture of it, tweeted them, and they love it. They've got pictures from all over the world. Francis Benali.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. All right. Newcastle 3, Chelsea 0. Let's do Newcastle quickly. Rafa Benitez obviously has done an unbelievable job with what is ostensibly a championship level squad. Is he going to stay there or is he sick of Mike Ashley's shit?
Yeah, great question. Great question. I hope that he stays. We did our awards on the show after the game, and Pep Guardiola is clearly the manager of the year, but if it wasn't Pep Guardiola, it would be Rafa Benitez for me.
I think that's fair.
Because of what he's done, he's a true manager. The amount of garbage and he's had to deal with at that football club week in, week out, when they're not playing, it was almost like a reprieve to him. He just wanted to get on the touchline and enjoy the game for the week because he had to deal with all the nonsense with ownership. So I've got nothing but admiration for what he's done at that club, as you mentioned, Alex. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's a championship level squad. How many of those players would you say that are ever going to be bought by a team above Newcastle and go, yeah, we want him? There isn't anybody.
There's not one.
So that's for me. I hope that he stays there, but if Newcastle lose him, then they could be even more precarious.
Oh, I think they lose him, they're relegation candidates.
Yeah,
immediately.
Sure. But he was so brave taking that job in the first place, because I know he was fired by Madrid. But then to go from Madrid to Newcastle, that's not where people would expect you to go and do that type of job, and then stay with them when they got relegated in the championship, and then come back. I just have so much admiration for this guy.
He's a football romantic.
I'll have to agree with everyone here. Finally. Even though I've been very hard on Rafa Benitez in the past, more out of spite than anything, because everyone else likes him. But he's had to deal with some shit, as you said.
Polarizing character, though. He's not everybody's cup of tea. You're right.
No, but he's great because he dealt with Chelsea's board, Madrid's board, and now he's at Newcastle.
Chelsea's board and their fans. That was brutal. That was booing him while winning the Europa League. Chelsea, meanwhile, that's a perfect segue. Have finished fifth. What a weird season. They won the league last year. They were brilliant, and then they almost looked like they deliberately made their squad worse. It was a bizarre summer. Yes. Some of the recruitment has been weird, to say the least. Conte hasn't been happy from minute one this season. He was clearly not happy with the players they bought last season. Where did Chelsea go from here? If we look at the history of Chelsea, they probably win the league next season. That's exactly what they do, right? But it's been bizarre.
The biggest boom and bust club in the Premier League.
Yeah, in the last four seasons, they've been all over the place. But they had 93 points last season, which is actually the second highest number of points if you don't include this season.
Right.
So what happened? They were 10th, 1st, and then they were 10th again, 5th, and then 1st. They're all over the map.
Yeah, I think you talk about it, Alex, was there the sale of Diego Costa and Nemanja Matic, just to allow those players to leave. Then it was clear that Conte and Costa didn't get along.
Yeah.
It was clear that if you're going to allow a player to let that to move on, that was almost like a power move for Conte to stay. But then he eventually did get his contract extension, but it was only given until 2019, which was clearly a sign from Chelsea going, well, yeah, you can have the keys, but it's a one-year lease, And at that point, so then they let Costa leave. Despite that, if you're a Chelsea fan now, and if you wake up in the morning and Antonio Conte's left, you're like, oh, well, we got rid of Costa because of him, and now he's left. Because say what you want about Costa, and of course, he's obviously a difficult character inside the dressing room, but he set the standard every week on the field. Yes. How hard he worked defensively.
Absolutely.
Everybody else followed him. The spine of the team was so organized with Kante and Matic. And then Luis was great last year. And obviously that's been a problem this year. Courtois, one of my favorite goalkeepers in the world, has had a dip this year. But that's because I think some of the players in front of him have genuinely let him down. Mm-hmm. So it's a difficult team to analyze. And as you said, they might win it again next year. So
Roche said something that just bothered me ever since he said it, but in a good way. So you said they had 93 points.
Yeah.
And this City team, who people are saying could be the, one of the best teams in the Premier League history with United 98, 99, Invincibles, all that. And they were 7 points less than this team that is one of the greatest ever. That shows, one, how sensational they were last year and the huge fall from grace that we've seen this year. It's quite unbelievable.
Yeah, well, last year they won 15 games in a row.
Yeah, after a 3-0 loss to Arsenal.
And it was all about the tactics and all about the switch to the change. That's what, when they lost 3 goals in the first half at Arsenal, they made the formation change at halftime, and they went on that mad run, and they didn't... They literally hardly conceded a goal from open play in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how they went about winning the league. And it was all about defensive structure.
And dropping John Terry.
Yes, exactly. Right, so that was the thing. And so then now their defensive structure has been a mess. Obviously, Christensen, I think, looks like a player that could play there going forward.
Yeah.
But it was in his first year and made mistakes. Cahill has dropped down a lot. Luis was injured a lot. They took away Matic. They took away Costa, who was a massive part of their defensive game.
They played Bakayoko.
They signed Bakayoko, which has been a disaster. Mm-hmm. Like an absolute disaster. They signed Bakayoko. They make this amazing chant in the crowd about Timmy Bakayoko never giving the ball away. And then suddenly he gives the ball away every game. Yeah. And so they can't sing the chant anymore. And so it's all gone off. The fans are not happy. And for some reason, they thought it was a good idea to play Cesc Fabregas in a two midfield, which has been a disaster. So,
But we were just discussing how Conte wants to be sacked.
Yeah,
it does feel that way.
You want the money? I would do the same thing if not. I would want the payoff from being sacked.
Well, especially what he wants. If he looks back at the other Chelsea managers, they all get sacked, so they get the payoff. He's like, I'm not going to be the one that doesn't get the payoff. Like, Villas-Boas is off doing the Paris-Dakar rally with that money. Like, forget it.
And he did say when he came in that he had long discussions with Carlo Ancelotti about what it was like to manage Chelsea. So it almost feels like that he's gone. You know, and I'm quite disappointed in watching the fall from grace for Antonio Conte, because he was always that man who just, you could feel like just, you want to play for him. He exudes confidence. Mm-hmm. And then this year he's become like a shell of his former self. And he's like you said, he just doesn't care. Like, he showed up to the game today like a homeless person. He hasn't shaved for weeks and wearing his tracksuit. It looked like Mourinho did that day, the Denver Bar game. So it's been a massive turnaround, and maybe it's the middle finger up to Chelsea going, well, I know you're going to sack me anyway, so I'm just not going to care.
Yeah.
But they got an FA Cup final to play for. They played this game. Honestly, it was one of the worst performances I've seen from Chelsea in recent memory. Yep. They were awful.
I'm almost not. I don't think I'm going to watch the FA Cup final. I'm not sure I can take it. It's going to be awful.
Yeah.
Like that. This United side and this Chelsea team, I don't know. Quickly before we leave this, if Conte does get sacked or leaves by mutual consent, whatever it may be, where do you see him ending up next season?
I see him taking a 1-year sabbatical, because if you look at him right now, he's completely destroyed. He's not himself. He needs time.
That's fair, but okay, moving past the sabbatical, okay, because PSG got Tuchel, although I'm not convinced that will work out, but let's say that's happening for at least the next year. Inter seem pretty happy with Spalletti at the moment. Roma don't need a manager. Juventus at the moment don't need a manager, although perhaps if Allegri ends up at Arsenal, Conte could go back. But I don't know, there aren't that many options.
There isn't a lot of options. I'm not sure he's really convinced that he wants to go back to Italy either. So it's almost like, been there, done that, conquered that, what do I want to go there for, unless it's another payday to a massive team like Inter or Milan eventually that needs to get revitalized. But I don't know. I personally, I think it'd be hilarious if he had a shower, just went around the block and was an Arsenal manager. That'd be tremendous. Yeah. You know? And a little bit of a shave showed up as a different. And then suddenly he was like the Antonio Conte of last year instead of this year. And then Chelsea were
that
like,
would be great for Arsenal.
Bring David Luiz with him.
Why not?
So there could be a chance that a lot of vacancies open for national teams after the World Cup.
Yeah, that's true.
Italy's available now, but Mancini,
he's so restless that I don't think that would suit him.
I agree. I think that it's almost like the international manager's game is almost for the old or for the recycled club manager that's had enough. You know, I feel
like Southgate.
Yeah, well, Southgate never did anything in the club manager. It's no longer prove yourself in the club management to get this great job in international. It's the same as Lopetegui with Spain. Like, they fail and then they get an opportunity. Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. All right, let's take a quick break and do a little quiz, and then we'll cover the rest of the Premier League.
Welcome to the Quizzy Promise.
Very good.
Hey,
and donated by our guest today.
So this week, we have three participants. Alex, please tell us what your buzzer is. And Bernie.
That was
easy. And KJ. Very good, very good. So we have three questions, a couple of bonuses as well. So, yeah, here we go. Question number one. This season in the EPL, all three promoted teams stayed up. What was the last season this happened? KJ.
2011-12.
Bingo.
Wow. Who was it? Is that the bonus?
That's not the bonus.
Wigan?
Coolmaster has no idea.
Oh, okay, never mind.
That's not part of the question.
All right, fair enough.
We're going to move to question number two now. So, we had a goals record this season for Man City.
Mm-hmm.
What season was it when Chelsea previously broke that goals record?
That was easy.
Bernie.
2010-2011.
Wrong. KJ.
9-10.
Got it.
That was Carlo, right?
Ancelotti.
It was. That was a bonus question. Who was the manager? And yeah. Other bonus, how many goals did they score that season?
102.
Wrong.
98.
Wrong.
All right, well, just tell us.
It was 103.
Okay.
We were close.
Oh, okay.
I think I actually mentioned it earlier.
I do remember a lot of 4 or 5 nils that season.
Very good. So KJ is kicking your bums.
Oh, obviously, yeah.
Question number three. Arsenal had a very dismal season this season. But what was their previous lowest league position that they finished in?
Ever?
In the Premier League. Alex.
12th.
That is correct.
Well, very good.
Nice. I got nothing.
Go on.
Oh.
Yeah. That's not one of those things that you want to know, you know. Just
hey, I got more solid calling me, so it's
for sure. Christian, congratulations on that convincing quiz victory.
That wasn't convincing, wasn't it? Was it
2-1?
Yeah, it was 2-1, but you defeated two people.
Well, usually we split the points pretty evenly, so you know. Let's call it an unconvincing victory then,
yeah,
and we'll segue
go.
To Arsenal.
That's perfect.
Who beat Huddersfield 1-0. Awful game, and Arsenal were bad, but scored a beautiful goal. So pretty fitting tribute to Wenger on his last day, I suppose. As an Arsenal fan, obviously when it was announced that Arsene Wenger was leaving, I was somewhat sad, somewhat emotional, but I think, and I was discussing this with a friend yesterday, it's been so bad for so long now that I'm absolutely ready for this to happen. I'm more excited than I am anything else.
I think you should be excited. With Wenger, there's a lot to be admired about. I understand why there's a lot of Arsenal fans that have found it very difficult to get that disconnection. I mean, loyalty is a great trait to have in life as it is. So I could always see that people wanted to be loyal to him. And it's nice to always have that. You always dream to have that team that means so much to you to be in the hands of someone who it means as much to them. And you don't always get that in sports, whether it's for players who are playing or the guys managing the team. You just think, okay, yeah, he's going to come and go, but I'm going to still be here when he's managing another team, you know, or playing for another team. It doesn't mean as much. And Arsenal have had that for 2 decades and more, plus 22 years. It's very special to have that. But look, without somebody who's got a connection to the club, unlike you, Alex, I can understand why, when you put the common sense, rational head on, that, look, you know, I think you look at the team and you think what other managers are doing. There was a significant, I think, underachievement over the last few years.
100%. Long gone are the Arsenal days where they were a force. So it'd be good to see a rivalry once again.
Yeah,
with Arsenal
nice.
And anybody.
Yeah, that's true. Other than
especially
Bayern
Munich.
I agree. It's my dad was Wenger in longer than most people, and I used to tell him 5 years ago, you need to get rid of this man. If not, nothing will happen. And he was very sad and very emotional. My dad's an Arsenal fan, so we fight all the time. But he was very emotional and Wenger. I didn't get it. I just looked at him like, you've been trash for 10 years. Why are you sad?
And your dad hasn't been able to watch games for years.
No, he can't, because Arsenal frustrates him more than anything else in life. More than I did, even. So he really does not want Arsenal games because the emotion in him, it hurts too much. So for me, I thought everyone would be just jumping up and down. But I guess I do get it.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is we love Arsene Wenger as a human being. And I don't... Arsenal will probably never have a manager with as much quality as a human being than Arsene Wenger.
Great point.
But and so that's probably why it's hard to disconnect. You know, if it was someone like Mark Hughes, no one would care. But
we celebrate him.
But let's do the fun thing and speculate about who might take over. So Mohamed and I are very very much in the Allegri camp, if it's possible. But I feel like Arteta or Vieira are more likely.
My question is, I think Allegri would be the best candidate, first off. Like, I agree with you guys, and that would be awesome. I just don't understand why you go from Allegri to Arteta. Like, the middle is Luis Enrique, Carlo Ancelotti, Conte, like you said, if he has a shower.
Yeah.
Like, why are we going from Allegri to not just Arteta, Buvac, and Rui Faria's name was mentioned like ever, so...
Get out.
Like, why are we having this conversation? It's like, why?
It's basically anybody who's available. He's leaving a job? We'll line him up for Arsenal.
So I have a theory about this. I mean, it's not particularly, you know, controversial or unique, and Christian, we'll see what you think. But I think the Arsenal board want to unite the fans after, you know, a long period of somewhat embarrassing division. And so... You can do that two ways. One is with someone like Allegri, who no one can argue with.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Proven winner, everyone will be behind him. Or with someone that has been at the club before, who the fans will give some leeway to. I don't think that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't, you know, it's not sensible to give someone with no experience the job, like Arteta, or someone with limited experience in Vieira. Although I think Vieira has shown some promise. But the people in the middle can still be divisive.
Yeah, I get that. I think that obviously the Vieira and Arteta connections are because of they're part of the former Arsenal family. You know, I don't think that they'd be connected if they didn't play for Arsenal. You know, so certainly Patrick Vieira wouldn't be. Whether you think he's showed promise or not, he continues to get battered in big games in MLS. So if you hire an MLS manager and 10 games into the season next year, you know, you've lost five of them, then all of a sudden you could be firing you could be in David Moyes' Man United territory, which is a disaster.
Yeah.
So you cannot get there. There's no excuses now. They've known about Wenger leaving for a number of months. I think they saw on the writing on it was right there. As soon as they even handed him the extension, the 2-year extension, they knew, I think everybody knew at that point, that he's not going to last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hand him the 2-year extension, they saw what happened in the last year of his last contract. We couldn't allow him to get into the last year again because it would have been a complete toxic environment. So they've had, my point being this, they've had a number of months, if not a year, to plan for this appointment. So you've got to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key.
And that actually, it's something that I can't even imagine. Like, who's going to replace him is an argument that, you know, is going to stimulate everyone's imagination. But whoever comes in, this is a team in transition. They've had the same manager for 20 years. You know, Ferguson was at United for 26. So if we look at the transition over there, we had a disaster with Moyes. We had Van Gaal for a year or 2 years. And then we have Mourinho. And we're still not kind of, you know, there where we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
But now Arsenal are in that same period where they're going to transition managers. So I can't picture a smooth transition.
It depends who you get. I think it is a precarious situation. The only similarity with those two situations is the manager with 20 plus years leaving. You have one that won the league with a team that was good enough to win the league and was brought down by a guy who didn't know what he was doing. Now, if you're Arsenal, you're sixth, I think, right? Sixth this season?
Yeah.
And you're fifth last season. If they bring in any of those guys that you mentioned before whose name is not Vieira and or Arteta, they will probably do better than that. So Arsenal should see this as a building block to the future, but don't put too much pressure on the situation so that you can do that. But that does not mean you go and hire a Buvac, a Vieira, or Arteta. No, you need a steady hand to see you through the next 3-4 years, because that's probably what it's going
to
take.
Yeah, I agree with everything there. I think that it's a more positive environment to take over than it was per Sir Alex Ferguson. I think that at that point, you know, Ferguson won and then left, and it was almost like there was no, you know, succession plan.
Mm.
And Arsenal have no excuse for that. But what they have to do now is they need to find the next manager that what Wenger has lived on over the last decade is the benefit of doubt factor. So he's been given the benefit of doubt because of what he accomplished prior to the last 10 years, which hasn't been anywhere near good enough. You're not going to get the benefit of the doubt factor as much as that, but the next man is going to need the benefit of the doubt factor. He's going to need the resume. He's going to need the trophies. So they're going to go, well, hang on a minute. He's had a bad 2 months. It's okay. He's done it. Because if you get somebody who hasn't done it and then suddenly slides again and everyone's going to be like, well, let's get him out. And then you become exactly the team that everybody else, Arsenal fans have been laughing at over the last 22 years,
yeah.
apart from Man United, saying you just become a culture of a sacking club.
Yeah.
They want to get the next man who's not going to stay there for 20 years, but maybe 5 years or 6 years to build on again going forward.
Even that's a long time in the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to pose this perspective. What year is it, George Graham? I think in 89, and what year did he win the first division?
89-90, I think.
89 was when they scored the last goal, the Mitchell Thomas goal,
right.
Michael Thomas goal.
Well, he won two.
Yes.
Right? And then there was a 4 or 5 year period where Arsenal were drab, for all intents and purposes. Then Arsene Wenger came in. It's similar in that Arsenal have come from a high point to 10 years of dross and now they're fifth, sixth, and then moving back. I see similarities in that, where they brought Arsene Wenger on, and then they send it back. I think they can still do that with the right appointment, but
for sure, it
has to take time.
My concern is that Gazidis has been vocal in saying that we want to carry on in the Wenger era, which is this fantasy football experience that everybody wants to see. That, you know, look, people care about winning.
Yeah.
Okay, you got to figure out how to win. You know, this notion that we want to play this kind of attractive brand football, so that suddenly should rule out someone like, not that he's available, but someone like Diego Simeone, for example, is nonsense. If he's available, you call him up and you get him in and you pay whatever you can, because he punches above his weight. And that's the kind of man. I don't care if Arsenal get back to winning 1-0 every week, like they used to under George Graham. Arsenal fans would snap your hand off right now, because they know that that is the best way, because they won't spend as much money as the big Goliath of the Premier League. The best way is to make sure you're defensively difficult to break down and go out there and have Aubameyang up front scoring as many goals as you will, because the guy can score you 25, 30 Premier League goals a year.
I will gladly go back to watching counter-attacking football. I would love to see counter-attacking football. With the players we have, it would make sense.
Do it right.
Yeah, but the thing is, you got to have a defence that doesn't include Mustafi.
Well, yes. Yeah. Again, I could play in that defence. Bernie is a very good centre-back. You can step in.
Well, Rob Holding will probably appear on your podcast next week. He's just been given an extension.
Probably would. It will be fascinating to watch. We'll see how that goes. I mean, it has to be in the next couple of weeks, because then we're into World Cup territory.
Got to be. I mean, there might be. What are they waiting for?
Yeah. Some World Cup managers to get sacked, you know.
They need to have known who the manager was before they announced Wenger was leaving. For me,
could be Roberto Martinez.
Wow. Alex was having a reasonable day before you suggested that name.
Shots fired.
He just threw up in his mouth.
Now it can be anyone. Pardew, he's free. All right, let's move on. Manchester United. Speaking of Rui Faria, Manchester United. 1-0 today against Watford typifies the season. Rubbish performance. 1-0 win. No one's happy. What, you know, thoughts, reflections on this season of misery, despite finishing second.
Firstly, on this game, the only good thing I have to say is that the goal that they scored began with a Michael Carrick pass, with the lovely weighted ball from Michael Carrick, and this is what Manchester United have been missing for years. That deep-lying playmaker that can spray the passes, dictate the play. This is what we need to replace. I love Serge Milinkovic-Savage. That's not what we need right now. We need a Toni Kroos, someone like that, who can actually dictate play and move the ball around. That's what we've been missing. And that I'm glad that on his final game, he was able to have a massive contribution. And I hope that it lives long in the memory, because that's what I want to see moving forward. At least that little microcosm, I want to see that.
Interesting.
It's hard to hold on to that hope of, you know, what you want to see in the past coming back in the future. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, a Paul Scholes-esque deep line, you know, a ball right to left. But I'm going to lower my expectations for United moving forward. I think they're going to play ugly Mourinho football next season. It's not going to be any different. But we're going to finish either first or second.
I was going to say, if City hadn't had this great year, the Premier League's first divisions have been won with this points total in the past.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd have won this league playing this way, would you be as down?
No.
Right. So you only didn't win the league because Man City were brilliant.
Yes,
like,
and no.
You've accomplished enough over the last few years. Like, you were dismal for 4 years. So
yeah, I mean, I understand that.
I understand where you're coming from. Trust me. I'm just asking the question because the problem with Mourinho is, which is why he didn't get the job in the first place when David Moyes was appointed.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the game when David Moyes played Mourinho's Chelsea at Old Trafford, the first year of David Moyes, the only year of David Moyes, and it ended 0-0, of course. And Man United fans taunted Jose Mourinho on the touchline that day, saying, "You wanted the job."
Mm-hmm.
So now he's got that job.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why he wasn't given that job was because United have always been synonymous with entertaining football.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Manchester United play foreign football, and also the manager, there was, you know, Bobby Charlton, the Manchester United board, they were scared that Mourinho was going to make the brand of Manchester United be harmed because of his antics.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now he's there. He slowed down a little bit. I think next year we're going to see Mourinho again to the forefront with some of his antics again.
Mm-hmm.
But he has brought you back to a level
of
an area. Obviously, the Champions League exit was bad, but at least you've got back to some kind of relevance.
I agree. And I was looking at some stats yesterday. The number of points improvement, dramatic improvement actually. Number of goals conceded, all these things. If you look at them statistically, there are major, major plus points, which is also why I do not believe that Liverpool will finish above Manchester United next season. I think Liverpool, to me, are still a little bit inconsistent, where United are more consistent. If you look at the performances that they put out, which is also drab, But the fact of the matter is, what irritates me about Jose Mourinho at Manchester United is they won a lot of big games this year, I give him that. But there has been a lack of bravery, which I don't understand. For example, Sevilla. Why? Why?
Yeah.
There's no need for that. And before these wins against City, Spurs in FA Cup, you looked at it and you went, you know, you had to find everyone into the game feeling, we're going to go for this, or we're going to try and win. And that is not synonymous with my experience as, even under Van Gaal, you felt that we're going to go for Liverpool today. Even if we're going to pass the hell out of them, we're going to go for it. And that makes it not fun to watch.
Yeah, especially like watching a game at Old Trafford when City are coming and visiting. And you know we're just going to get battered at home.
But they're miles better than you.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But this is the point, is that you've got to, as a fan base, but also as a manager, you have to evaluate your talent better than anybody else. And I think Mourinho looked at that squad and said, well, I know what he said when the first time he went there. He said, I'm not going to hide behind words. I'm not going to say we're going to go for fourth. We're going to go for the league, and that's what we do. That's what his first press conference was. You go back and watch his first press conference. Bullish, aggressive, arrogant, winning mentality compared to what his press conferences have been in the last 2 years. He's gone away from that so quickly because he looks at the squad and goes, we are bang average.
Yeah.
And if we open up, we're going to get beat. And that's what he has looked at that team and said, Smalling, mediocre defender. You know, Lingard, okay, I'll try and get the best out of him by working really hard. Rashford, extremely overrated, got some promise. We've got no quality here. Let's go get Pogba. Let's go get Sanchez. Baye, we'll work on him. Lindelof, we'll see how he goes. They've got the best goalkeeper, arguably, in the world. Mm-hmm. Other than that, Pogba, you could argue, Sanchez now. But before that, when he took over, no world-class players.
I'd agree with you, except for only one thing. And maybe some people say that this is actually better analysis for the whole season. If I look at Liverpool and I look at the way they went after Man City, their Manchester United team with the players they have, if you get rid of maybe not Lukaku necessarily, but if you go Martial, who is a fantastic young player, maybe Sanchez, I don't rate him right now the way he's been playing, but overall, yes. They could have gone, the way they went after City in the second half of that game, why can't you do that more consistently? There is no reason with the players that they have that they couldn't. The Liverpool squad is not as good as Manchester United squad. With Ox playing in the middle, with Henderson being
the right Chamberlain, as he is.
Chamberlain. They're just not as good.
He is as good as Lingard, and Lingard plays a lot.
I think he's as good as Lingard, absolutely.
So in terms of depth, though, I think.
No, I think overall, United squad is a better squad. So he could have gone for more games and just gone for the
But he doesn't have a front three like Liverpool do.
No, but I think he has a good front three.
Well, Martial, I don't think he's ever going to play United again.
No, and that's because of Mourinho.
That would be tragic.
No,
that really would be tragic.
I don't know if it is. I don't think it is tragic. I don't think he's that good.
Oh, I don't know. Clip this bit.
But
clip it.
No, I'm just kidding.
Like, honestly, you've got to be able to have the mentality to play for Manchester United. And I don't see the mentality of a big game winning player. I don't see it. And that's for me. You know, he may move on. Where's he going to go? Is Real Madrid going to go, yeah, we want him? No. He's not a Real Madrid player.
Juventus.
Right? So, Juventus. He'll go to Juventus and he'll be good. Because it's Juventus and they dominate most teams every week and you don't play big games every week.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he might be good. But mentally, is he the right player for your football club?
I think when you're coming in as a 19, 20-year-old and did what he did in his first season, and even what he did in this season up until Alexis Sanchez came in, his form was spectacular. He was the, if you look at the goals and assists
he worked harder and
he was tracking ahead of where he was and other players the same age. And then Alexis Sanchez comes in and it goes, now I agree in the mentality, you should fight for your place and prove that you're better than Alexis, but Alexis didn't prove that he was better than Martial.
But Mourinho publicly called him out and said he wasn't a good trainer and he needed to work harder.
Yeah, so once
he got to that point, he's not going to lie, is he?
Oh,
he didn't play in the squad today. He showed up earlier. Apparently, he showed up and got his car and drove away. Apparently, it could be done. So
they said he's injured. So the official, but really, there's probably something else going on.
There may be issues with attitude or training, possibly. Although what I would also say is, and you're right, that players need a mentality to play for a club like United. But there's also mentality to play for a club like United and a mentality to play for Jose Mourinho, which we've seen on numerous occasions, especially with young attacking players. Are not necessarily the same thing.
Yeah.
Jose Mourinho has a very certain set of expectations that don't fit everyone. He bought Henrik Mkhitaryan. That was his choice to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And within weeks, it was clear that wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
Some players just don't fit with him. And I think this might just be one of those cases. But
no.
I wouldn't write Martial off at the elite level because of the relationship with Mourinho necessarily.
Yeah,
that's a good point. But I'm glad you brought that up because I want to bring up Mourinho's mentality. I think we were looking at some stats, Bernie and I.
Mm.
And over the seasons when Mourinho won the goals scored for that team was always in the early 70s, you know, goals for. And the goals against were always like the mid-20s, maybe 15 in that 1 year where they won with 95 points. So he's been pretty consistent this year with, I think we had 70 goals in the league this year, or 68, and we conceded 28 goals in the league. So it's kind of exactly what Mourinho wants. It's stuffy. It's like cagey football.
There's one problem with that is he's bought Lindelof. He's bought Bailly. He didn't do anything, I think, with the fullbacks at all. The United's defensive numbers have nothing to do with the strength of the defense. Nothing. It's the strength of David De Gea. Because you look at the XG numbers and you look at the shots that he has saved, he's gotten better. The defense has gotten worse. And that doesn't show me that Jose Mourinho is actually improving this team defensively in and of itself. It doesn't show me that at all.
Yeah.
Good point.
Okay. So predictions for next season. Second.
Yeah. Ish.
Yeah.
Depends on the transfer window. I mean, if some good players come in, we'd be a lot more optimistic.
Oh, you'll buy. Hopefully fullbacks. Anyway, we'll see. KJ, second?
I think they could win it.
Ooh,
we'll see.
Big shout.
Whoa.
So you're a United fan, KJ?
No.
Whoa!
I'm just saying, they're within the discussion between Liverpool and Man City to go on and win the Premier League. You continue to defend and stop goals the way they're doing, and with one of the best goalkeepers, you got to sort out your attack, go forward. Sanchez rested finally for the first time in a summer for seven years.
That's true.
We'll see.
What about Man City, though?
Well, that's what I said. I said earlier about Man City. I just felt like they've got to go by again. But it's very difficult. I think it's 9 years since the team defended in the Premier League. It's very difficult to maintain that sustainable excellence at the top level.
So you see a three-horse race? Like an actual challenge of three teams? Or?
Well, I mean, who knows? Like we said, it depends if what Chelsea do with Conte.
Also, it could be four.
Yeah.
Or Arsenal, you know. To be fair to KJ, one thing you can't underestimate is the effect, the positive effect that Marouane Fellaini leaving might have on this United team. So
there were a lot of rumors saying that he may actually sign that thing.
5-year contract.
If he's sensible, he will sign anything they put in front of him. Anyway, let's finish off the Premier League. The best game of this weekend, Tottenham 5, Leicester 4. Well, if you like proper defending, this is not the best game. But if you like, you know...
That's a ridiculous game.
An open shambles of entertainment, this was it. They just, like... abandoned defending entirely. It was a lot of fun. Were you watching this?
I saw the goals, but we were doing other games at TSN. It reminded me of that bizarre West Brom Man United game a few years ago.
Oh,
was also, I think it was 5-5.
Yeah.
It was on the last day of the season as well. Mm-hmm. I think Lukaku played for West Brom.
He scored a hat trick.
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you just get these bizarre scores at the end of the year when obviously teams no longer care, and Tottenham didn't have a lot to play for because the top four getting the Champions League automatically anyway. And
they were already confirmed, right?
Yeah.
Before the game.
And Leicester, you know, who knows what's going on with Claude Buell. So
can I ask, how do you feel about him? Because Southampton last season, I think they were eighth.
Yep.
Trap football, apparently. And they sacked him, and then this whole emotional roller coaster. Rumors that he's going to be sacked at Leicester, and they're eighth again. Do you rate him or no?
I got a lot of time for what he does in terms of the defensive aspects. The problem is with both those examples you used, they're exactly the same, is that he comes in, makes a difference, and then uninspired football after that, and they just go on a long run for 4 or 5 months, and then the season ends in like unsavory fashion that doesn't sit well with the fan base or the team. So I was asked on TSN, do I think he'll survive? I think he will, just only because of the ownership group at Leicester is... for the majority of the time they're pretty organised, and they don't necessarily want to be this chop and changing. But you know, would it be surprising me if he left? No, but like, my goodness, line him up: Everton, West Ham, Southampton.
Yeah,
you know, like there's going to be a number of jobs open. So,
I was just going to say I could see an Allardyce Puel job swap at some point next season, like halfway through next season.
Well, Marco Silva coming back potentially.
Well, with any luck. He's more interesting.
Big fan of Marco.
So. Yeah. Okay, so that's Leicester. Spurs, Christian, what do you think of the season Spurs have had? There's been statistically a bit of regression compared to what they did last season, but I think the competition has been harder. But there's been very obvious progress in the Champions League.
Yeah, I think they've been great. You know, they play 38 games away from home. You know, like everyone was talking about Wembley
absolutely
at the start of the season. This is going to be a major problem for them. And in the end, that storyline evaporated very quickly, and they were able to make it sure that there was enough. You're bound to get a drop off. I mean, last year, the previous year at Wyale, and they went the whole year unbeaten. So you were never going to get that kind of, you know, winning record again at home. But I think it was a really important year for them again in a very competitive Premier League to get in that top four, to maintain that Champions League income, but also to continue to say to these players, look, we're now a full-fledged Champions League team. Don't, you know, for Eriksen and all those players, you don't need to leave us because we're in the Champions League again.
And they beat Real Madrid.
And they beat teams and they've proven it when they won a very difficult group. So.
Do you see them in the title challenge?
Not at the moment, only because I'm really worried about what they're going to do in defence because it looks like Alderweireld's going to leave. So they did a decent job this year maintaining that that gap was, that it wasn't as big as a problem in that hole in the defence. But, you know, the Tottenham are always finding these players, Davinson Sanchez, and, you know, go on and they're shopping in a certain area where they've got to find these players and turn them into gems and then make them more, you know, more money, you know, and really the value over the transfer fee is very difficult. So it'd be nice for them to go out there and boom, you know, that's why they got Lucas Moura, for example, go out there and get the genuine, already world-class player. Wow, he's gone to Tottenham. You know, that's that would be nice if they were able to pull off something like that, but it's always going to be a challenge. But, and everyone's waiting for that big win, that trophy win, but it might not come, and I still don't think that should define the Pochettino era, which has been was been absolutely brilliant.
He's great.
Fair enough. One more thing I think they need to fix is I think the Serge Aurier experiment didn't work. No. I think even Kyle Walker-Peters played the first game and last game of the season and was better.
He's an absolute nutter.
Yeah. I don't know. I was quite optimistic about that signing, but no, same. Absolutely not. Same. Hasn't worked out.
That's not been great.
Just like, was it 3 or 4 red cards? Anyway. All right. Before we end, let's have a quick Champions League final prediction. Christian, Liverpool have done amazingly well to get to Champions League final, produced some incredible displays of attacking football. There will be a massive amount of space behind Marcelo. Will that be enough to give them a victory?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the key, is the Marcelo-Salah matchup. It's fascinating to me. We've done the Champions League 3 years in a row now for TSN, and it's been the Real Madrid era. You know, they're in the third final. They might win the third final in 3 years. Watching them, you just, as an analyst, you just get perplexed because you're like, they just keep getting it done, and they're not actually playing that well in so many big games. But football can sometimes be about moments, and they find a way in moments, and they also have an era about them that's so, an era of invincibility. They believe in themselves even when they're not going, you know, and they've got winners, Ramos and Kroos and Modric. And for me, you know, I learned a long time ago not to write them off, so that's why I think they're the favourites here, even though wouldn't be surprised, nothing should surprise you over one game anyway if Liverpool went out there and did it, but it's going to be very difficult to, I think, to top the champions.
So what's the score?
Oh, I don't do score predictions, but I don't bet either. But I've heard people talking about, oh, bet the over or bet both teams scoring. Or it looks like it could be quite an entertaining, high scoring affair.
It should,
which
be,
will probably mean it'll be 0-0 after 120 minutes. Right? It would be so terrible to penalties.
Yeah, it really would.
Ronaldo will be able to take his shot off as well in the fifth goal again.
100% that's happening.
But it's difficult to bet against Real Madrid anyway these days. I think.
I think the only sure thing is Salah and Ronaldo scoring.
I think that's fair. Roche, I know Liverpool victory would devastate you.
Well, I think they have a glow about them right now. And it just looks like the chips are lining up for them to win. Real Madrid are really start and stop. You know, this whole season has been like that. So I think that, you know, coming to that third final, it might not be as glamorous as Liverpool coming to a final in such a miraculous fashion. So I feel like Liverpool are going to pull this off.
Okay. You're protecting yourself emotionally. I understand.
In some ways, yes. But in some ways, I feel like they do deserve it a little more than Madrid.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
The thing is, it's a fair assessment of that. I think Liverpool probably want it more. Well, actually, maybe not, because Real Madrid had a poor La Liga season. Maybe they want to end their season. I mean, they want to win it, but maybe the determination and a little bit more might be Liverpool's. But I think the Champions League experience will tell at the end of the day, and Real Madrid will win. Probably Ramos has another good game in a final, and that might be the difference, because anyway, you guys know how I feel about Sergio Ramos, but when it comes to finals and winning things, he knows how to get it done.
Fair. So, well said.
If that's the case, 4 Champions Leagues in 5 years, unbelievable.
Mental. And we still don't know if Zidane's any good. It's incredible. Yeah. alright, we'll leave it there.
Hey, you're not getting away without saying what you think.
What?
About this final.
Oh, Real Madrid will win.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay, wow.
Christian, you have an event coming up at Opera Bob
Montana, don't you? Much similar to yours, actually. You have an event coming up too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
we'll do yours first.
June 7th, Thursday before the World Cup, exactly 1 week before the World Cup. just great to be an advocate for the Football for Good Academy in Uganda, where a friend of mine, what I love about the academy is it's obviously soccer based, it helps the kids, and there's a Canadian connection there down there as well. Adrian Bradbury is working down there with his family, so we know that when the money goes down there, we know where it's going to, and they're making a big difference in all age groups. We're now seeing graduates in the teenage group going towards some kind of European destination. So amazing. We're getting together on that Thursday. I'll tweet out some more details. It's basically $150 for a team of three. So it's like $50 for a good night out. Mm. You come and you get a team, and then you basically bid on World Cup players. And so we have a fantasy World Cup, and then if you want Ronaldo or you want Messi, you're going to get him if you want to spend the money. So you get a 100 million budget to buy on 11 players, one goalkeeper, four defenders, three midfielders and three strikers. And then we'll have a tracking system during the World Cup where your team can go up against other teams. And I think the prize is around $500-$600. So and the rest of the money goes straight to Uganda. So hopefully we'll sell out all the 24 teams and we'll have a good night at Opera Bobs.
Yeah. Sounds fantastic.
It does.
So can we do a team of four if we have to?
You can, of course. I'm not going to deny you.
We'll smuggle
Mohamed in. I'm doing a team of one. So. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. And where can if you are tweeting out details, where can people find you online?
Just at Christian Jack, KristianJack.
Wicked. Thank you very much. And we haven't quite decided on our pod schedule for the rest of the summer, but I'm sure we'll be doing some World Cup stuff soon. So
we'll just play this one back every week.
Yeah, sure. Hopefully it was good enough. All right. Take care.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.